Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
All the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison. Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. My name is Josh Parcell. I've got a great show coming up for you guys today. Adam Kramer from Bleacher Report at Kegs and Eggs on Twitter is going to join me. We're going to talk about his latest story in Bleacher Report on DJ Uiagalelei. Nailed it. The newest commit to Clemson, the number one quarterback in the class of 2020. We'll talk about him, the story. It's kind of a really interesting story with this kid. Some layers to that Clemson fans are going to be interested in, his family, but also his plans maybe to play baseball and how that's going to impact, you know, his career at Clemson as a football player. Talk about that much more, you know, some Clemson Alabama stuff as well, because we always end up getting into that at some point. But then we'll also talk about Kirby Smart and his philosophy on scheduling big games early in the season. He has talked about beefing up the schedule. So we'll talk about, you know, should we see more of that in college football? Do we want to see big time games early in the season? Is it smart for these programs? Because we obviously want to see them, but is it smart for someone like Georgia to be playing against the likes of Florida State and Clemson in September? We'll debate that later in the show. But right now, we'll get straight to Adam Kramer. Don't forget, guys, you want to subscribe. You want to download, you want to tell your friends, spread the word. We've had a really good month here of podcasts coming back, so I really enjoyed getting it back rolling with you guys, and I hope you've enjoyed it as well. I always am open to feedback for what you want to hear on the show. Next week, I'm going to have Yogi Roth on the show. He's from the Pac-12 Network. He also works with the Elite 11. We're going to talk all about quarterbacks on next week's episode. So quarterbacks going into this season, maybe some guys to be on the lookout for moving forward, and just kind of the status of the position in college football today. So Yogi Roth will be next week. And now I welcome onto the College Football Country Podcast for the first time, amazingly enough, Adam Kramer from Bleacher Report, Kegs and Eggs on Twitter. Adam, it's been 3 years of this podcast. I honestly have no earthly idea how I've waited this long before I've had you on, but I'm glad I finally made it happen.
We'll see if that's the case afterwards. But no, man, thank you for having me. And always good to talk CFB.
Yeah, man, got a lot to get into in the show. In just a minute, I'll talk to you about your great story about DJ. I'm going to try it once and I'm done. Uiagalelei, and I know
that's pretty darn good.
I'm so confused on how to pronounce this, man.
But you get out of the gate strong, because that's where most of the people struggle. And it was funny, like, with talking to different editors of this story, like, they didn't even attempt it. It's going to be amazing hearing Dabo say this for like 3 or 4 years. That was even the thing. And watching commentators butcher this as well is going to be amazing.
So yeah,
that was a strong effort by you.
Yeah, I'm doing my best. Well, we'll see how it looks in 2 years. It's still going to be a while before this guy's on the field. But we'll talk about him in a minute, because you had a great story on him. I also want to get into some stuff about Kirby Smart with you. But for now, Adam, huge news in the Twitter world, and you tweeted about this the other day, so I've got to ask you. You were very excited, life-changing moment. Twitter is now going to let you tweet GIFs when you retweet somebody, when you quote-tweet somebody. And this has been something I've been waiting for a long time, but you're kind of the king of the GIF world. I want to know, what is Adam Kramer's favorite GIF?
I have so many. I could tell you the one that comes to mind.
Okay.
There's this GIF of the guy running off the high dive, and he, like, jumps into the pool, like, head first, where he's got, like, the running man feet going. I've probably used that 25 times. They've made, like, variations of it, too, where he doesn't land into the water. It's like a Photoshop where he goes into, like, this endless abyss. I love that one. I love another one of a guy jumping out of – there's so many variations, and this is sad, but if you type in – like, jump out of window into the Twitter GIF tool,
yep,
you get gold. So sports moments, regular moments, Twitter acting up as it does on a regular basis. I've got some go-tos, but I try to diversify. So this news, though, like you said, sometimes I think the best reaction to something is a GIF. Like, to me, it's an art form. Twitter is an art form in itself. But if you can find the right small like animation to summarize your just general feelings about a subject, like that can be harder than coming up with a tweet. So you're right. I've always enjoyed that part of it. And it's also maybe easier now with kids and everything to just, I'll just do that rather than come up with my own thought. I'll let somebody else.
Well, I know. I feel like the a picture says 1,000 word phrase is just outdated now. Now it's a GIF says 10,000 words.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. They just are so, they're so useful in so many situations. I look back at like what my college football Saturday looks like, and it's assortment of completely useless GIFs. And that's how I like it. That is sort of my brand of content these days.
If there was a college football program that you could just use that GIF for right now, jumping out the window, diving off the deep end into the abyss, who is that right now?
It's probably like it's Rutgers, like continuously. Like it's probably, that's just like the Rutgers anthem. Like you can't say that about Kansas anymore. Like Kansas has got like, you've got a like an animated clapping GIF, like an overjoyed baby clapping would be a good Kansas one. Like no, Rutgers or Illinois. I mean, I'm close to Illinois too. I'm not as sad. I think Rutgers is that GIF without question.
That's about right. All right. Let's move on then. Let's talk some actual football. So you wrote the story, Adam, about DJ. I'm going to try one more time. Ui Anilele, the number one quarterback. I'm nailing it, man. I'm getting closer and closer. So he's the number one quarterback in the class of 2020, just committed to Clemson a few days ago. You had a great story about kind of his upbringing, his family, his relationship with his dad, which is really a fantastic story. For fans who don't know or haven't read the story yet, kind of what do they need to know about this kid that who seems like he's going to be the heir apparent to Trevor Lawrence eventually?
Well, first off, one of the reasons I love writing about high school players, beyond I think you get the story before it's told, in a lot of cases, is the access is so much easier. And you know this, right? Like, yeah. You don't have to go through an SID. But getting to talk to him and his family was on par with like getting Ohio State to agree to let me profile their quarterback. Like that's like how difficult this was. And I've never seen an athlete, and I mean this in a positive way, by the way, like they're really protecting this kid. Like they've basically shut down most interviews. Like this was like a lucky grab. And so the way like that kind of, to me going into it, was like, wow, this is different from any high school athlete I've ever covered. And so that part of it would be a little intimidating. Like, what is the response going to be from him, from his family, from his coaches? And I was so impressed, and everything was so welcoming. The first thing that stands out to you about this kid is his dad. As weird as that sounds, and we'll talk about the arm talent and everything else, but his dad, Dave, like he was literally a bodyguard for some of the most famous musicians in the world for a decade, traveled the world, and he's 400 pounds. And before DJ, who's a freak of an athlete, Dave was a 330-pound defensive tackle who could do like 360 dunks. So if you want to know like genetically why DJ's crazy gifted, why his younger brother Mateo's in eighth grade is crazy gifted, you have to start with their dad. But then you talk to DJ and like you this kid has been set up to be this sort of that prototype transcendent quarterback. Like everything around him screams that. His demeanor screams that. He throws a football 85 yards. He throws a baseball 95 miles an hour. He is quite literally like has probably the most special arm, one of the most special high school arms we've ever seen. What it translates to, who knows? It's difficult, as you know, like one of the most difficult things in sports even now is forecasting quarterbacks. As good as we're getting, or as good as they're getting, I don't have to do it, as kind of figuring out recruiting and how these guys are going to do, that's still it's still a hard thing to do. But man, oh man, if you're going to construct that guy, this is what he would look like. This is how you would build him.
And along those lines, I know you and I talked on the radio the other day about this, but who are the guys that he kind of reminds you of? I mean, just with his combination of size and that arm strength, there's not many guys that you can compare him to, but who are some of those guys he reminds you of?
Well, the one that jumped out to me was Cam Newton, just because like when Cam threw the ball, it sort of did things differently. And it's not just like throwing the ball 85 yards. Like when you watch DJ's highlights, like watch when he's under pressure and has to kind of throw the ball off of maybe 1 foot or a foot and a half. and it just still has tremendous pace. Like, that was the thing that jumped out, and that's very Cam-like. But I got to say, the more I thought about it, you brought up Jameis Winston. And look, I get it. Jameis has not been necessarily the guy we thought we were going to get in the NFL, like, skill-wise. I know there's a deeper conversation with all things Jameis. But
yeah.
But in terms of his multi-athlete stardom, that feels right, man. Kind of constructed with a similar build. DJ, you know, like Jameis, they're worried about him getting too big. Like, they've kind of tried to lean him out. He's thick. He's a big dude. Like, I really like that comparison, especially when you incorporate baseball into the conversation.
Yeah, so how serious is the baseball thing? I mean, you know, we just saw it with Kyler Murray in terms of going pro, but, you know, reading your story, this guy seems like he wants to play in college. Is that, like, how concerning should that be to Clemson fans?
It's, you know, I think it's serious, but it's interesting. Like, up until this year, he had taken time off, didn't play the previous year, didn't pitch in high school to save his arm. Like, he's tried to find stable footing with football, and now that he has, I mean, beyond stable footing, baseball is a part of his life. So watching, you know, him pitch is, I mean, he's got a special arm. Like, this is, you know, front of the line rotation build, and without really a ton of training, practice here and there, he comes out and he's hitting 93 through or 95 on the radar gun. So you think if he were to put all of his efforts into baseball, what that would look like. And I think at least a while longer, he's going to give that a shot. Before football, he loved baseball. I think that's interesting. Like, he even mentioned he grew up loving baseball. That's what he wanted to be. And football just kind of fell into the equation because of his dad, because he was good at it, all those things. But I know that he wants to play at Clemson. I know the recruiting pitches from all these schools, or at least the schools that wanted this dude, were, yes, absolutely, come play baseball here. Here's the coach. Here's the facilities. Like, let's figure this out. You know, we'll make it work. So for now, at least, I think baseball is a huge part of his life. Now, you get to Clemson, and you're in that facility God knows how many hours. Okay, Trevor Lawrence, you're going to back him up for 1 year, and then you're going to be your guy. At what point will it take a back seat? Because it's easy to say right now, and bless him for it, that he wants to do both. I think he's going to try. I think it'll be really, really difficult. But then again, we just saw Kyler Murray do it and do an amazing job. I think the question will be, is Kyler Murray's situation, which is the ultimate anomaly, is that going to have any impact on him? And we'll have to wait and see.
You know, it's so weird because we're in a world of specialization where most of these kids, if you're a supreme talent, by the time you're 12, if not younger, you know, coaches are kind of trying to funnel you into just one sport and focus on that one sport. And yet now we've seen not just DJ, not just Kyler Murray, but Jameis and Russell Wilson.
Yep.
We've seen a handful of these guys who they played both sports all the way through college. I guess a two-part question for you would be, do you think that we're going to continue to see these guys and maybe more now that you guys have had success at the highest level being the NFL, really split their time between two sports going into college? And then I guess off of that, who's going to pick baseball? It feels like these guys are all ultimately coming back to football. I mean, Todd Helton, I guess, back in the day ended up with baseball. I'm sure I'm missing a guy or two here or there, but the guys who find their way to baseball somehow always seem to work their way back to football sooner or later.
Yeah. Joe Mauer was like the one, right? Like, and that worked out, but that, hey, so here's the deal on that. You talk to coaches, and Dabo has been this way. I think a lot of these guys, at least at this level, are moving away from specialization. Like, I think a lot of college coaches that I've talked to, track and field has always been like the companion for football because it's like, yeah, get out there and work on your speed. But the guys I've talked to kind of like players as long as they're able to, you know, do the things they ask and they don't clash seasons. Like, they like that part of it. At least it feels like it's sort of winning back its way. I think the area of this that becomes really interesting is, let's say, just for the sake, that DJ is taken number 7 overall out of high school, which means you can get that signing bonus now, or you can bank on 3 years from now or 4 years from now, you turn out to be the quarterback that we think you're going to be. The difference with Kyler was, like, he was a year away. And that's it. By the way, he signed – like, if he doesn't have this kind of, you know, insane season, like he's going to play baseball. So if you're taken out of high school and we can steal you away early, because look, if you're taken that early and it's like, hey, man, here's $10 million, reach down and pick it up, Are you willing to risk that and bet on yourself?
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting point. And look, that's something that maybe DJ will be blessed with a choice like that. I don't necessarily think he'll go that high. I think people think he's going to pick football, but yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Like, there's true stardom in football. We can agree that you can be a star in baseball, but if you are a star in football, it's going to be a more lucrative life for you, and it'll be a different kind of stardom. And I don't necessarily see that changing anytime soon.
As far as Clemson goes, this is now the third time in 4 years that they ostensibly have signed the top quarterback. You know, Hunter Johnson kind of wavered back and forth between number one and number two, but basically they've signed the top QB now three of the last 4 years, including Trevor Lawrence. How do they continue to do this? And I know this is in an era where, you know, blue chip programs, they're signing five-star quarterbacks every year. They're trying to. I mean, they're recruiting over top of guys all the time. They want as many QBs in that room because it's an inexact science, and with the way kids can transfer out it more easily nowadays, you need to have that room stockpiled and know that you're probably going to have some attrition at some point. But Clemson continues to bring these guys in. And this kid's from California. I mean, this is far away from Clemson, which is something that they're just starting to tap into as they become more nationally relevant. You know, how is Clemson doing this? How are they continuing at the quarterback position specifically to continue to reel these guys in?
Well, think about the one thing that has kind of eluded Alabama is that.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you have Tua, who is a highly regarded guy and is just an amazing talent, and people knew about him. But they haven't had, like, a run of this. Like, this is kind of that missing infinity stone. And you saw what happens with a quarterback like Tua and these pieces that they have. It's an insane thing, and yet they still didn't win. I did a story on Dabo last year, and actually, you know, it's really interesting. I remember talking to Taj Boyd. And Taj Boyd, if you go back to the rise of Clemson, like, that's the dude.
Yep.
It's not necessarily Deshaun Watson. It's Taj Boyd. And I remember him telling me a story about Dabo. You know, he's got offers from Chip Kelly and Jim Tressel, and here walks Dabo and starts talking about, you know, this really tough upbringing, his mom living with him in college and his dad being an alcoholic, and all these things that coaches have this kind of, there's this protective layer in front of most coaches. Dabo is him, man. I mean, Dabo, from people I've talked to, the time I've spent around him, that dude is just very real, very authentic, and it's kind of infectious. And you add in a personality that's just naturally, you know, has that magnetic attraction to this success, to those facilities, to a conference that allows you to be, like, continuously dominant, at least right now. Like, there's this just this perfect timing and formula, and just Dabo being him, that it all kind of comes together. Look at Deshaun Watson's success. I mean, look at the success of that position. Look at Trevor Lawrence now. And DJ's the interesting thing, right? Because most likely, or really, he's going to have to come in, and Trevor Lawrence will be there another year, and he'll sit and learn. When you can start to get guys buying in to do that, and Alabama's done that defensively, you know, the defensive line where they were just kind of stockpiling guys in the cupboard for later, the Quinnen Williams of the world. When you can do that at quarterback, it is – life-altering, because that is, if you have one of those guys or anything close to it, you're going to be really good. So it's a combination of things, and really it is Dabo just kind of being Dabo and people saying, yeah, this is the dude I want to play for.
You know what I found fascinating is I was looking, this is about a week ago, at Clemson and their trajectory recruiting. They're actually not, historically, now they're getting to this point, but in the last like 5 to 7 years, their recruiting class rankings haven't matched Alabama's. It feels like they have, but they haven't. Florida State has actually, according to the rankings, out-recruited Clemson for the last 6 years. They have an average ranking a little bit higher than Clemson. Tigers are actually outside the top 10. Now, that's obviously changing. They have suddenly knocked into that top tier where they have the number one class at the moment right now, and it's probably going to end up that way or in the top two or three. This is what worries me if you don't like Clemson. This is what should concern you is – they've taken these classes that are very, very good, but not elite. They're not the Alabamas of the world or some of the Ohio State even. And they've been beating you with those kind of classes. Now, all of a sudden, they step up in class a little bit. I mean, I feel like you have to buy all of the Clemson stock you can, even though it feels like it's at an all-time high. I believe that Clemson's probably going to win more national championships in Alabama in the next 5 to 7 years. They're probably each going to win a few. But if you had to pick one of those two programs going forward, Which one would you take to win more titles?
Yeah, it would be Clemson. I mean, I've got, and look, Alabama's right there too.
Sure.
Like it's no like slight. It's just I would pick Clemson. The path to get there is a lot easier. That's the truth of it. We know how hard this sort of any given Saturday thing is. You've got two more years of what the best collegiate quarterback in terms of potential that I can remember. And Tua, by the way, is like in that discussion too. But Lawrence is on like another level of prototype. You've got, and not only that, but you know, you've got the Justin Ross, you've got Higgins, you've got so many things to work with. And it is funny you mentioned it, like it hasn't always been this way at Clemson. Like Hunter Renfrow to me is like this symbol of this evolution. Now that dude can just play.
Yeah.
Like I know you stand next to him and they called him the janitor because he looked like a janitor. And then Justin Ross and Tian, they speak glowingly about him, but that's a guy that kind of found his niche in this evolving landscape. You hit homers on your defensive line. I mean, you knew Dexter Lawrence was going to be all world when they recruited him and pulled him up from up north. You know, Christian Wilkins, you get to stay another year. Like, they've just sort of hit, like, the lottery in all these different things. And then, oh, by the way, you land Deshaun Watson. You had Chad Morris recruit him for basically 3 years and only him. And that's the kind of guy that just turns this thing on its side. That's the guy that flips it over the edge, in my opinion. So it's scary what they can become, because the difference between Clemson and Alabama is Clemson would just go crazy like they have. They'd lose a bunch of guys, and they would not be able to reach that level. Alabama has that assembly line, but Clemson is building that. It could be very, very scary years from now if they continue to develop these guys and just keep getting quarterbacks, what they're going to look like.
Well, and, you know, last week I had Marcel Louis-Jacques, who he covers the Panthers now in Charlotte, but he used to cover Clemson, and we were talking about the Clemson-Alabama thing, which feels like that's going to be like the Tim Tebow first take debate of college football for the next however years until Saban retires. It's Clemson or Bama. But he brought up an interesting point about the continuity of the staff at Clemson, and I looked it up afterwards. Alabama has changed coordinators 8 times since 2013. Clemson hasn't changed once. I mean, since Chad Morris left and they promoted Tony Scott and Jeff Elliott, and those guys are Jeff Scott, Tony Elliott, they're the co-coordinators. Venables has been there. The continuity, even below the coordinator level, but especially at that level, it's been there for Clemson. And Alabama, I mean, obviously they've still won 2 national titles, but they've had to battle that constant turnover at the coordinator level beneath that, and now they're on to Sarkisian for the second time. It's just, it feels like Clemson has an atmosphere that you would buy more stock in. Again, you'd feel more comfortable in moving forward. Right now, it's Saban controlling the wheel at Alabama, which is great and all, but it feels like you would feel safer about Clemson with the regards to the continuity of the staff, too.
I don't think we give actually Nick Saban enough credit for the way he's been able to adjust and adapt. It's nuts. Like, to hit on as many hires as he's had is pretty insane, because they basically had to redo this thing, 3 years in a row now?
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely insane. At the same point, you know, Jeff Scott and that staff, I mean, they're paid a fortune by assistant standards. And at some point they will move on. But the fact that they've been able to kind of all stay together from a recruiting standpoint, from a familiarity standpoint, from a development standpoint, like, you cannot like overstate just how important that is. And Dabo's going to get the $93 million deal. And, you know, you're going to have a coordinator making $2+ million and maybe multiple eventually there. And it's all worth it, because you're absolutely right. If you're looking right now, heading into this year, at the biggest difference between these two teams, okay, like, look, you both have amazing quarterbacks. Pick your one. I'll take either. You both have insane wide receivers. I'll take either. Okay, defensively, you give an edge to Alabama, but that's the big thing. We don't know if that offense is going to be the same, and that was the most fun Alabama offense we've ever known. We know Clemson's still going to be really, really good. What is Sark going to do with all these toys? He's got tons of them. So, yeah, absolutely. If you're trying to do this whole thing where you stack them side by side, that's a massive, massive advantage in Clemson's favor.
Yeah, I just keep going back to that. And I know Clemson has had infinitely more success than Virginia Tech did, but that was why Virginia Tech was so good for so long. I mean, Frank Beamer didn't lose anyone off that staff for basically 15 years. And on the surface, most people aren't going to pay attention to those sort of things, but it absolutely matters when you're trying to build a program. And Clemson is not that different from Virginia Tech 10 years ago. And then, you know, Dabo's elevated it and taken it to higher, you know, much higher levels than Tech ever did. But it's the same kind of thing. Like, I think that gets overlooked a lot when you talk about what makes a program so great. And Dabo is killed it, and having the deep pockets at Clemson doesn't hurt either. But, you know, I want to move on from Clemson real quick, just for a couple minutes. This story caught my eye and I wanted to ask you about it. So I don't know if you saw Kirby Smart. He spoke to Dan Wetzel from Yahoo the other day, and basically just talking about the way Georgia's scheduling and how they're not afraid. They'll go play the big boys anywhere. We'll play home and homes. We'll go to their campus. They'll come to ours. And, you know, most of these games are going to be played when I'm retired. I mean, this is, they're playing Florida State in 2028 and Clemson in 2029 and 30. And then again, a few years after that. So they've scheduled all these games, you know, a decade out and stuff. But the idea behind it, I'm curious what you think. So Georgia, of course, they're in the SEC. They play eight conference games, not a ninth. But they do have Georgia Tech every year for their, you know, one non-conference game. Do you think it's smart for these programs in terms of trying to make the playoff to go out and try to schedule another, you know, I'll just say Power 5 game, you know, top 40 type team? I mean, there's a difference, I guess, between a top 10 team and scheduling Rutgers or Illinois every year. But, you know, do you think it's smart for Georgia to be going out there and booking Florida State and Oklahoma and Clemson and Oregon and the likes of those teams?
No, not for Georgia. Absolutely not. I love them for it. That mentality is amazing, and I appreciate it. The Notre Dame and all of these things, like, I'm like torn on this because I love the fact that they're doing it, and I hope that this is something that other programs get behind, because it is refreshing. And as you know, those first few weeks of the season, like, college football does a horrible job of promoting college football early in the year because it comes in mostly with a thud. Yeah. Okay, and this is when these games will exist. So as a fan and someone who covers it, yes, yes, yes. But do you need this game if you're Georgia? Like, do you? Like, you really don't. Like, if you do your thing, and Georgia's been really close to doing its thing, with the exception of what, like 6 minutes, then you're good. So is it smart? No, but I'm like not in a position to say it's dumb. I love it. So I'm like, my bias kind of leaks into this conversation. But no, if you're Michigan State, if you are Washington, if you're Wisconsin, this is the mentality you have to have. You got to schedule up because sometimes your conference is not good enough. We know the reputation of the SEC. We know the competition in the SEC. That's not going to change for the foreseeable future. So no, it's probably not the smartest thing. And yet, I want to hug them. I want to hug them. I want to shame others who are not doing what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, and look, Florida just announced a couple series a decade from now, too. So, I mean, some teams are getting behind this, and maybe there's a little bit of some, you know, whipping it out, so to speak, and saying, all right, we're going to play this game. You're going to, you know, what you got. And I love that. I mean, hopefully it does kind of breed more teams to want to do this because it is good for the sport. It kind of goes, and I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but it is why I would like an 8-team playoff. Because it creates more margin for error early in the season, and you can get games like
this.
People are still going to watch an 8-team playoff, and you get great games on the front end. I think it would be great for the sport. And I'll be honest, I wonder if, I don't think he'll say it publicly, I wonder if Kirby, specifically, when he's scheduling these games 10 years from now, knows we're probably going to have 8-team playoffs. So
that's a phenomenal point, and I know I actually was contemplating bringing it up, but it's always a scary rabbit hole, like a playoff conversation gets everybody weird.
Yeah.
But no, it's actually a great point on the timing. I didn't really think of that. And you're right. Like, by the way, we can both agree too, like the home and home is the holy grail.
Yes.
I'll take Alabama versus whoever in whatever stadium you want to do it in. If you give me Alabama versus that same team in a campus, like that's why college football is brilliant. Not to play games in Jerry's World. Well, yeah, that's just not – it's fine. We love it, but we're not going to, like, wrap our arms around it the same way we would. So I completely agree on the 8-team. People say you're going to have, you know, lose some of its competitive edge. Actually, you could gain a ton of it. I also think that the 14 playoff, you have seen teams slowly schedule up. Things are not perfect. It's not the case for everybody, but you are getting marquee matchups. The problem is you have to wait like a decade to actually see them. That's the only thing I hate about all this.
We will only have made real progress when Alabama plays a road game out of conference. It has been 8 years. They played Penn State in 2011 in Happy Valley, which I actually forgot about, but I was reading it in that story. And they have it. They've played neutral games, which good for them. I mean, they're playing. Powerful teams. But go on the road. I mean, for once, like this is like Duke basketball, Syracuse basketball. Like they're afraid to leave the state. Like it's okay, Alabama. You can beat anybody, literally anywhere. Go do it. It's good for the game. But this is something that I did find interesting. I wanted to look this up before we talked about it. I looked at either the four seeds and a couple of at-large teams that have made the playoffs so far. Ohio State in 2015, they were a four seed. They lost, but they played Virginia Tech at home that year. Still got in, won the Big Ten, Cardale Jones, all that nonsense. The next year, Oklahoma won the Big 12. They were the four seed. They beat Tennessee, and I believe that was the Baker Mayfield game, the big comeback in Knoxville. That was the thrilling game. 2017, Washington, they're the only one. I mean, they played Rutgers. That doesn't count. But Ohio State got in as an at-large as a three seed that year, and they beat Oklahoma. Remember, that was the big controversy between them and Penn State, and they had that win over Oklahoma that heavily worked in their favor. 2018, Alabama probably would have gotten in anyway. They beat a Florida State team that looked on paper preseason number three, ended up falling way short of expectation, but they at least scheduled Florida State. And then Oklahoma, you know, last year played UCLA, which, again, you schedule these games far enough in advance, it looks better than it is. But most of these teams have at least scheduled a Power 5 team, and presumably a pretty well-known one at that. Some of them have been better than others, but it's not like the teams that are sneaking into the playoff, because, I mean, we've had a debate over the four seed more often than not. You know, that's a game that can work in your favor. So I do think that it's worth scheduling up. But like you said, if you're Georgia and you know the path is going to go through Alabama, and in the future it's, you know, Auburn and Florida. I mean, they look like they're on the rise as well, especially Florida. It can work against you. I mean, it is a risk. It's absolutely a gamble. But if you win that game, it can be huge for you when you're trying to decide if we get in as the four seed. And like you said, if we go to eight, it'll absolutely help.
Oh, it'll be great. And you will drastically improve the first month of the season, which needs improvement. I mean, if you could tell me what I'd love to fix, it's that. You know, and the kind of the discussion of scheduling up, Georgia does have kind of a luxury of scheduling up, because if they lose, not only do they play in a conference that's conducive to things turning around, but the reputation helps. If you're Wisconsin and you schedule up and you lose and you beat up a bunch of bad teams, like the assumption is you lost to the only good team. You know, it's right. It's different for everybody, but if we can just I'm on board with this. Allow teams the flexibility to, or the freedom to lose a football game. It is okay. You're not going to spike the football season. We are still going to watch. I think if anything, and now this is turning into a playoff discussion, I knew it, but that's okay. You're not going to take away. You're going to open up the window for false hope for more teams. Like I've always been for it. I think it's logical. College football, I love it so much for its stupidity. And it is a very stupid sport. It's a great sport. But the sport does very stupid things, and logically, they move like dinosaurs. This seems like something that's going to happen. It would be great if Kirby Smart, who is scheduling up and aggressively doing it, will benefit from it, probably more than anybody else, the way they're going after it.
You need it. I need it. We all need it. It feels like it'll happen at some point. But good for Kirby Smart on just giving us something fun to look forward to in September of 2028. You know, we'll be watching on a rocking chair. But hey, you'll probably have six kids by then. You got a third on the way.
Yeah.
You'll be you probably will have grandkids by then. By the time they play Clemson in 2034, you're gonna be close, man.
Oh, that's sad, man. Yeah, can we schedule these games? I know it's hard, but can it be that hard to like move some things around? I mean, you get in the 2030s, man, you start to lose me. Quite literally. Hopefully not. Quite literally. You may lose me.
Hey, I'll miss you when you're gone. I'll just say that. I'm just gonna say that
preemptively.
I'll let you know how it goes when I meet you up there in heaven, or maybe in hell. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right, man. Hey. It was a blast to talk to you. I'm glad we got you on, and maybe next time I'll try to have you on the podcast more than 24 hours after we had you on my radio show. But you know, we'll see. Maybe I'll communicate better with my producer on that. But seriously though, appreciate having you on. That was a ton of fun. We'll do it again sometime soon.
That sounds good, man. Appreciate it.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Don't forget, next week it will be Yogi Roth from the Pac-12 Network joining me. As always, guys, download the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Tell your friends. Follow me on Twitter at Josh Parcell. You can follow the show at CFB Country. I'm hoping to get back writing again soon on cfbcountry.com. I've got some ideas in the works for that. So going to try to give you some writing, some content over the summer for sure. And yeah, man, we'll see you next week. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. I thought it was a great one with Adam, and you can follow him on Twitter at Kegs and Eggs. We'll talk to you next week with Yogi. Until then, guys, we're only 3 months away, 3.5 months away. We can do it.